is gelukt. Toen moest de auto zijn. Maar die heb ik nog zo gezegd.
Ja.
Oké, okay, welkom everyone. Welkom also at home at the Han University. Welcome to our series of guest lectures on dynamics and control. And today we have invited Saskia Hansma, a specialist on the dynamics of tires, and she will have the presentation for us today. So welcome, Mr. Hansma, and please, let us hear your presentation. Take it.
Thank you. Welcome. As you already have seen, it's about tire testing and driver modeling, and why we want to model the driver, and how are we going to do that. So that's what we're going to discuss today. First of all, a short introduction of myself and the research project that I'm doing, and the reason why I'm invited here. Then a little bit about driver modeling. A simulation study we performed for driver modeling, and we did some experiments. And in the end, some conclusions and follow-up. In the end, I also have short videos from the tire testing, so you have an idea of how it works. First of all, introduction of myself. I'm a researcher at the Mobility Technology Research Center here at the Han. I'm also a lecturer for automotive engineering, for the Bachelor of Automotive here, and also for the Master. With the Technical University of Prague, we have a Master for Automotive Engineering, and mostly the vehicle dynamics part is where I give the lectures, and of course about the tires. The research I'm doing is a PhD research. It's in combination with the Han University Fredesheim, which is a tire manufacturer, and the Technical University of Helsinki. And the research question is how to improve. Welcome.
Thank you.
Take a seat. How to improve assessment methods to judge driver vehicle handling in relation with tire characteristics. There will be an explanation later because it's one question, but it will probably give you a lot of other questions. What is driver handling and what are tire characteristics and that sort of thing, but we will come to that. So I've started in the end of 2006. First of all, with a lot of study, because my background is technical informatics. I've studied that, so I had to become acquainted with the theory and practice of automotive engineering. And beginning of last year, we started with the research part and doing experiments. First, let me explain some words that were on the sheet before. It's mainly about handling, and handling is the cornering behavior of the vehicle. So it's mainly about the steering and not differences of speed. Of course, if you are doing a handling circuit, then you will change also your speed. But the main interest of our research is about the handling of the vehicle. And the driver perception, because handling is not only measured, but a big part of handling is how a driver experiences his feeling about the handling qualities of a car. So if we're talking about handling, it's also a subjective part in handling, and that is how the driver experiences. The other word I would like to explain are the tire characteristics. There are a lot of tire characteristics. In the corner you see the performing characteristics. The peak lateral force coefficient, cornering, stiffness, all that's got to do with the force that a tire is able to build up. So how quick you can get through the corner. But there are also other characteristics like the dimension of the tire, or the aging or construction. Those are other characteristics, but like I said, the main part related to handling are the performance characteristics. Of course, the size and the fire pressure also matter, but of interest for the tire company is, of course, how can I make better tires for specific handling purposes. Like I said, it's mainly about the force that a tire is able to build up. Well, I won't give a lecture about tires all evening, so I just took a little part of it. There you can see a car with four wheels, of course, in a diagram. And as you can see, the car is steering to the right. And when the front wheels are steering to the right, the car will still have a velocity, and also the center of the tire will still have a velocity that's given there with the vector V. If you turn the wheel will create a slip angle. And, well, it's quite exaggerated now, because normally those are small slip angles. It's only a few degrees. But for clarity, it's grown, of course, a little bit bigger. But if a tire has a slip angle, then it's able to build up a force. And as you can see, there's a force to the right, of course, also on the other one, on the other tire, and that will cause the vehicle to go to the right. Also, the rear wheels, after turning, will have a slip angle. So, the relation between the slip angle and the force is an important relationship regarding to handling. And here you can see this relationship here. As you can see, here is the slip angle, and this is the force, this force here. And it's related to the slip angle in this way, mostly. They look all the same. But the differences between tires are this part, which is called the cornering stiffness. So for small slip angles, you can linearize this part, and the stiffer the tire, the higher the cornering stiffness. So that's different between different tires. Also, the peak lateral force. As you can see here, it's approximately with 8 or 9 degree slip angle, you will have the peak lateral force. If your slip angle is becoming bigger, your force will reduce, or it will stay the same. Of course, it also depends on the tire. But mostly, we don't get there. If you're a normal driver, you will stay here in the linear region. But if you come near the peak force, there's a big chance you will go over the peak. And if you go over the peak, then you will be out of control with your car. So this is also the area where most electronic systems work. For instance, this is if you're turning into a corner and you get near this peak, your car, if you have ESP or that sort of systems, ABS, if it's for longitudinal slip, the system will work in this way, that it will push you back to the other side of the peak, so you won't go over it. Of course, if you're driving in a race car, or you're driving just very fast in your own car, then you will be in this area, but normally, normal driving, you will be there. And depending on the tire, you will have a bigger peak here, and then it will go down, or it will stay here. Of course, we want it to go smooth, so that you don't have a peak and then fall down very quickly. So this is an important tire characteristic, and actually, if people in the tire business are talking about tire characteristics, they usually mean this one, and not all the other ones. Well, first of all, the relation between the tire characteristic and the driver vehicle handling is not straightforward. Of course, because there are many different tire parameters, and it's not only the tire that counts, but also the road where you're driving on. If the road is dry, it will give another behavior of your car than when it's wet. Of course, we all know that. But so it's not only the tire parameters, but also the road. So there are many different tire parameters, and there is a lot between the tire characteristic and the vehicle performance, as experienced by a driver. We have a lot of electronic systems. Just a few are mentioned here, but of course, it's between the tire and the feeling of the driver. So it's not very simple to just make a very good tire that every driver experiences a good tire. Also because of these systems. Vehicle handling performance needs to be translated into the tire characteristics. If you know what is good vehicle handling, if you have a certain definition of it, of course, the next step is, the next step is to translate it in all those different tire parameters, which makes it a difficult job to do. And of course, the question, what is good vehicle handling? It's subjective. Of course, it depends on the driver. You will think vehicle handling as good, and perhaps your neighbor will have another opinion. It's very subjective. Also, it depends on the vehicle you're driving, and it also depends on the state you're in. If you are very alert, you will probably have another feeling of a car than when you have driven for a long time and you are getting tired. So it also depends on the driver's mental workload and the control effort. How difficult is it to drive a car? It's different between people. Some people like to do a lot of driving themselves, and other people, well, they want to leave it all to the systems if they can. So, how can we judge driver vehicle handling? If we have a certain agreement what is good vehicle handling, then we must have different methods to judge the vehicle handling. Well, there are different assessment methods which you can use. Let's start with the real life testing. First of all, you can have objective vehicle tests. Those are tests in which a driver has to perform a certain task, and actually he has to perform that task as it is prescribed. So actually he's a sort of robot. Mostly those are ISO tests, which state a steady state circle. So you have to be on a circle and slowly increasing your speed, or you have to make a certain step steer. If you do those objective tests, we can have all sorts of characteristic data that's telling you how the vehicle handling is judged. For instance, if you have a car and you're steering your car, you want it to react fast. But you don't want it to react too fast, because when you're driving straight, you don't want every little steering will cause the vehicle to make a turn. So there are certain characteristic data you must have for your car. Another one is subjective rating. That's when mostly a professional test driver is driving the vehicle, and he will drive a certain path or a circuit, and then afterwards he will give his opinion about the vehicle handling, about controllability, steerability, how stable it was, that sort of things. And mostly it's done with questionnaires, but also with some statements. It's called subjective, but it's, of course, those are professional test drivers, so they are trained to do it. So it's not that subjective as it would be if just normal drivers would do those questionnaires. So because of the professional test drivers, they are repeatable tests, and they are also very important tests, because you can have objective vehicle tests that state that your vehicle is good in handling performance. But if there's a subjective testing done with the professional test drivers and they don't agree, so they find the vehicle not very good at certain points in handling, then the vehicle will be adapted so that it performs better. It's the same with tires. If tires are rated not good for the subjective rating, they will go back and they have to be adjusted. So the subjective rating is a very important test. Of course, it's always done at the end if the vehicle or the tires are built. We had here the objective vehicle test, mostly open loop. So the driver must perform a certain task and he is not allowed to react on the vehicle. If we do closed loop tests or achievements, a driver is allowed to react on the vehicle. So for instance, he must drive a lane change. So he must drive straight, change lane, and then perhaps change to the other lane back. And he must do it as best as he can. And that's, for instance, at high speed. So at maximum speed. So he must do it at maximum speed. Or a slalom, also at maximum speed. Or he must do it with constant speed. But he can perform like he wants to. So he can react on the vehicle. Of course, closed loop achievements is mostly combined with subjective testing. Other tests which can be done are workload measures. The driver is performing a certain task, as we saw before, and we can collect certain data, or we can work on the data and then have certain measurements, like steering reversal rate. How often does the driver correct his steering? Also, the high frequency area, I will come to that later, because it was one of the things we did also. Time to line crossing, you can measure that if the driver is keeping his lane like he is driving straight, how much time it will cost before he crosses the line. So, as you can imagine, if it is very short, so he will almost go out of the corner, that's not very good. So you can have several measures depending on the workload of the driver. Also, you can give a driver a secondary task. So, for instance, the primary task is to perform a double lane change at high speed. And if you also add a secondary task, that he must also react on a light and push a button or something like that, or any other secondary task, then of course it will cost him some workload to do that. And the performance on the primary task, but also on the secondary task, can be an indication of workload. As you all probably will have experience, if you're driving and also performing a telephone call with your mobile, of course, hands-free, but still. Then, sometimes when you get in very busy traffic, then you're not able to continue the conversation. Or you just say, wait a minute, I have to perform a lane change or something. It's the workload that causes you that you're performing less on your secondary task. Also, but it's only done in research, restriction of the driver input. TNO has done some testing with drivers on the highway, so it was for research purposes, but on the highway, where a driver had glasses which he could open or close. So if they were closed, he couldn't see on the road. And if you look at the frequency of opening and closing of the glasses, there you can have an indication of the workload of the driver. So if he's very convenient and he's driving straight and he thinks, well, nothing is coming, then he can close it for a longer time than when he's busy with traffic. So that's also one of the possibilities. And the other one is also measurements, but not measurements on the car, but on the driver. like heart rate variability, muscle tension, blood pressure, that sort of thing. So, a lot of assessment methods to relate to driver vehicle handling. Those were all real life testing, so we have to have a driver and a vehicle and tires, of course, that are built. We can also do virtual testing that is simulating all the tests we saw before. So we simulate the vehicle behavior with the vehicle model according to the procedures that are describing the test protocols. If we have the open loop virtual tests, then the driver is actually a sort of robot, so we know which test the vehicle has to drive. He has to make a steady state, for instance. So we can build a vehicle model and just give a certain steering angle and a certain speed. So we can test already. If we have a model of the tires, we can already test them before the tires are actually built. If we do the closed loop test, of course, then we also have to have a driver, a virtual driver. The advantage of virtual testing is we can do the optimization before the vehicle is built and before the tires are actually built. Of course, it is done a lot. Probably you will have all built yourself a virtual process which has to be controlled. This is also used by vehicle manufacturers and automotive suppliers. Mostly a vehicle manufacturer has already a virtual model of his car and perhaps of his new car, and he can just go to a tire company and, well, if a tire company wants his tire on that new car, he must have a model of his tire, so we can simulate together the vehicle and the model of the tire and get an idea of the behavior of the total system. Of course, like I said, if you do the virtual testing, we have to have driver models. So the main reason why we want to have the driver model is to do the virtual testing. Well, if we do the objective test, that's not so difficult because the driver is a steering machine. We know he has to make a steady state circle, for instance, then we know he has to give a certain steering input. So, or if he has to do certain other tests with braking or... In subjective tests, it's more difficult, of course. The driver is a black box. We don't know how the driver actually judges a vehicle behavior or a tire. But if we could model that driver, even for subjective testing, which are the most important testing that's done for vehicles and for tires, if we were able to model the driver for the subjective testing, we could open that black box. And if we could look in that black box, it could give us a further understanding of how a driver actually judges a tire performance or a vehicle performance. And then this relationship, which is quite difficult, actually we could get more insight in that relationship. And we could make better tires. Better tires so that the driver vehicle handling is as the driver thinks it should be. So now, that was an introduction of why we need driver models for tire testing or vehicle testing. Well, that's the main question about my research. How can we improve assessment methods for tire testing in relation with tire characteristics? My research is about these four topics. The first topic is the driver models, but only of the professional test driver. Because if we take all the drivers, of course it would be more difficult. And tire testing is done by professional test drivers. And after that, of course, you and me are going to buy those tires and use them. But first of all, the professional test drivers will judge the tires. So the driver modeling in my research, the scope of it is only the professional test driver. Well, as you have seen already, mental workload and control effort could be an interesting subject in relationship with the subjective testing. So what makes it a good or a less good tire could be related to how much effort the driver has to put in the steering of his vehicle. Another topic is neural networks for the assessment of driver judgment and control of vehicle performance, because neural networks are able to have a lot of inputs, probably some inputs where we think or we don't know the relationship with the output, which is the subjective assessment of the driver. But neural networks are a tool that is used for those relationships which are not so clear yet. And in the end, of course, we will hope, based on the first three topics, that we will have a design of improvement of assessment tools based on refining the results. Well, here, let's look at the driver-vehicle system model to get an idea of how we could model the driver. I've explained you why we want the driver model. Let's now go into how could we do that. Of course, if you have any suggestions, I would like to hear it also. But as you can see here, this is a model of the vehicle. This is a model of the driver. And these are the control actions from the driver to the vehicle. Of course, it's a model, so it's simplified. The driver gets steering control also back, because he has the steering feel, and also a little bit from the brake or the throttle. Vibration and noise, but most important here is the path the vehicle is following, or the deviation from the path you want the vehicle to follow. The orientation, the following time, distance, etc. The road conditions and the required trajectory here is input of the driver. As you can see here, this is the open loop system. The driver is not able to react. And if the driver is able to react, you have a closed loop system. So, if you look at the literature and the research that is done, then there are a lot of driver models already available. What you see here is the environment, a model of the vehicle and the driver. And here is the model of Rasmussen, which states that the control, or the control of a human, can be divided in three layers. So if we look here for controlling the vehicle, you see here a skill-based behavior. So that's for stabilization of the dynamics of the vehicle. And if you're learning to drive a car, this is mostly what you have to learn. You have to learn the skill to drive a car. But also, you must learn rule-based behavior. So you must be able to interpret the other traffic and the traffic rules. And that's a higher level of driving. And here the highest level, the knowledge-based behavior. I guess the model is not the first time you see it. I guess you have seen it before, because it's a model that it's more used for human-based control. Well, I won't go into detail, but for all these different levels, there are different driver models, a lot of different driver models, but there's still not one model that suits every different level. So we have a lot of different models. Of course, the interest of my research is mostly based on the lowest part, it's the skill-based behavior, so the control part. And like I said, the reason to model the driver is to give insight in some basic properties of human performance. If you model the driver, you get more insight in how a driver actually drives a car. Also, it's used to predict the performance of the total system. So if you build a vehicle, you must not only look at the stability of the vehicle itself, but also in combination with the driver. So the stability of the total loop driver vehicle. And of course, for all the driver assistance systems, there are also driver models involved. Because if you're developing a system that should assist the driver, it must be tested on beforehand. And you can do it with real drivers, but you can also do it with drivers that you have modeled. So actually, because of a lot of different driver assistance systems, there are also coming a lot of driver models available. This is something I wanted to show you because there are driver models that have all three layers built in. And this is an example of the DARPA Urban Challenge. This is of 2007. And it's in America, and there's a 60 miles urban area course with traffic, and actually it's a contest, and vehicles must drive the 60 miles with the other traffic, without a driver and without remote control. So all the knowledge must be built in here in the car in a sort of big driver model. So actually, I had a film on Google found, but it doesn't work anymore. And I tried to find another one, but there wasn't time. But you can, if you just Google of DARPA Urban Challenge, you can see. And you can also see that the different cars are sometimes driving together, and so they have to react on the other traffic there and obstacles that are on the way, and they have to perform the whole course, and of course also obeying all traffic regulations. So also a model for all the traffic regulations is built in, and cameras and all sorts of things. But actually, these are very sophisticated driver models, of course, and they are not on the road, but it's a nice example of where it's going to go, possibly. So, modeling the driver. Well, if we look at the models of the vehicle, then they are mostly modeled with linear differential equations for control. Well, you all know that, of course. So, is it also possible to use the same language in which we model the vehicle to model the driver? Because if we use the same language, like control theory, we can mix them more easily. Well, that is done also, and mainly by using describing functions, so approximate transfer functions, which describe the human performance using the same language at which the vehicle performance is described. But of course, it's mostly linear models, so if we want to model the driver with the same language, we should model it also with linear models. But that's a problem because humans and also drivers are not behaving linear. They have certain thresholds, they detect and remember patterns, so in the same situation they will react differently if they enter a situation twice. They will learn and they will adapt. So those are difficult things to model, and those are non-linear. But we could use linear modeling theory if we use a quasi-linear model and if we have stationary tracking tasks. So a certain driver has to follow a certain path with highly trained controllers. So professional drivers, and with unpredictable input. So if we have unpredictable input, the learning effect is not there. So he can't remember what he has seen before. Well, this is the quasi-linear model of the human controller. Actually, it's a linear describing function, or a linear transfer function, and it has a linear response, but because of the non-linear response of the human, let's just add here internal noise from the perceptual system or motor system of the human, and then we have the quasi-linear response. Like I said, the problem is that the driver adapts to the vehicle. If the vehicle behaves differently, we still can have the same performance measures because of the adaptation of the driver. So it's possible that if you change the tires or something else in the vehicle and you let your test driver do the same testing, we will have the same data coming out of the total closed-loop driver-vehicle performance. Of course, humans, so the driver, is able to detect differences, but he will perform because he adapts to the vehicle. And like stated here, drivers can sense small differences. So we can't measure them, but they can, because we can see them in the questionnaires. They give different answers. And we think that that is got to do with the mental workload. I have a diagram here of mental workload, which is only one of them. Of course, you have many different ways of modeling mental workload. But this one I will explain. Here you can see the demand going that way. So this is high demand area, and this is a low demand area. So if you translated to driving, then this is the low demand area, and this is when you're driving on a highway and you are not allowed to go faster than 120 kilometers per hour, and there's no one on the highway, and you have to drive for 1 hour or 2 hours. So it's low demand, and you get bored, loss of situation awareness, and reduced alertness. So low demand, but it will take you a lot of effort to stay awake or to keep your mind on the road and not to stare. Or so this is the graph of the performance, and this is the graph, well, it's actually not seen, but it's the workload. So if you're driving at night on the highway, you have a low demand but a high workload. You must stay awake, and like we all know, you can open your window to get a little bit fresh air just to keep alert. So, and then if the performance here goes up, so the demand goes up, like for instance driving in normal traffic situations, then we have here a medium demand, we have high performance and a low workload, because we're used to it. Of course, if you are a driver who just has his driver's license, then you will probably will have a high performance and a high workload, because it's difficult. So it depends on the person, but normally we will be in this region. And of course, if the demand is getting higher, the performance will go down. So you're not able to perform as you should, and that will cost you a high workload. So you try to do your best, but you're not able to perform well. But if you look at this area, A3 here, you can see it's high demand. Your performance is still the same, but your workload is going up. And this is the part I think is of interest for the research. Because if we measure on the vehicle, we don't measure any differences in this area. But the driver, he senses differences. Because here, he has a low workload, and here he has a high workload. So he will rate his vehicle differently if he is here or if he is here. And of course here is the overloaded region. You're not able to perform the task. So these are different regions, and if we measure primary task performance and we measure this performance, we will only see differences in this region and in this region. So performance measures are usually the measures they use, but actually in this region they will stay the same. If we have self-report measures, like subjective questionnaires, they are all sensitive, but in A2, because in this area they have high performance, low workload, no differences. But that's the reason why the subjective evaluation is so important, because it's also in this part and in this part where the driver is able to distinguish between different vehicles or tires. So this is probably the part, if you're looking at tire testing, handling testing, they are always done at high speed in the extreme situations. So they push the vehicle to the limits to experience the differences in the tires. If you just keep in the low speed range region, you don't feel the differences that well. Of course, the professional test drivers, they can feel quite soon the difference between tires. But for the small differences, for instance, if they're testing their own tires with tires of the competitor, those are mostly small differences, so they have to push to the limits. So they will have the high demands. And as long as they are not here, but in this region, we are not able to measure it. We will have to ask the driver what he thinks of the performance. Well, if we go back to the modeling of the driver, of course it would be nice if we could model also that part. So not only the control part, but also the part that the driver uses, for instance, his mental workload, to give an opinion about the tires. And that would be a nice goal if we could reach that. So we could not only model the control part, the performance part, but we could also model the mental workload part. Well, there's a model that is often used for drivers, that's the McGruer crossover model. And as you can see here, this is our semi-linear model. This is the transfer function of the P from plant, but in our case it's the vehicle. And this is a closed loop. And Mr. McGruer, he has developed a describing function of the driver, and it looks like this. So it's in the control language, as you all probably will notice. And this part models the limitation of the driver. So every driver has a certain reaction time, which actually you can influence, but not very much. But professional test drivers will have probably a little bit lower reaction time than, for instance, me. And the neuromuscular lag. If you want to turn your steering wheel, it will take some time before you see you want to turn it and before it turns. It will take time because your muscles must come into movement. So these limitations of the human, they can be adapted, but not very much, and mostly if we model it, we just take a certain value for it. But if we look at the other parameters here, we can model a human driver as a gain, a lead, and a lag term. And by adjusting those parameters, McGruer states, is the driver able to adjust itself to the vehicle he is driving. So, if this changes, then the driver will change his parameters in order to achieve good control to the total loop, to make it stable. That's the first part, of course. But also, if you have a certain task to go in a high speed, in a double lane change, and you do it as quick as you can, then you will not only want stable control, but also you want the control to be that way that you have the high speed and still stay in the lane. So this is an interesting model we probably could use to model our driver. But first of all, if we use a model, then we ask ourselves, but if we use a model, and we use a model of the vehicle, is the driver, our virtual driver, is he able to adapt his parameters if we change the tires? Because if we do a simulation study, and we see no differences in the driver, then probably it's not such a good idea. So, the first thing we have done is to perform a simulation study and to change the tires of our vehicle and to see if our driver, our virtual driver, adjusts his parameters. Well, here is the simulation we've done. We have a path tracking simulation. So we have a certain path that our vehicle and driver should follow. And based on the previewed path error and based on the orientation error, so how is the vehicle oriented regarded to the position where he wants to go to. Based on those two errors, he will adjust his steering wheel. So in the simulation study, we just have a constant speed, so the only output is the steering wheel angle. So here you can see the vehicle has a certain error of the current position where he should be. He looks straight ahead, a certain distance or a certain time, because it's constant speed, it doesn't matter. And he sees a path error. Based on that error and the orientation, he will change his steering wheel. Here you can see the control model. Here we have the vehicle model. Here we have our driver model. And it's a McGruer crossover model, but a simplified one. We will see that in a minute. First of all, our driver must be able to see the path deviation and the orientation deviation. So he must calculate the errors. So he must look ahead and look what the errors are. And based on the previewed path error and orientation error here, the human controller will react. Here you can see the diagram of the driver. So this is the McGruer model, but only the simplified version of it. So our driver only has two gains. One gain for the path error and one gain for the orientation error. Based on those two errors and the different gains, he will have a steering angle. But first he will have a delay and a neuromuscular lag. So the signal is a little bit delayed. So, what we do is we let our virtual driver drive the virtual vehicle around the path that we made for it, and we define the cost function. And the cost function is based on the path error, so how well is our driver following the path that he should follow, but also we defined a certain measurement of the workload. And as he only steers with constant speed, we have only the steer workload. And we define the workload as the steer speed. Because actually it's not so difficult to steer, but it's more difficult, it will give you more workload if you have to change your steering angle all the time. For instance, if you're driving on a highway and you want to go off or you want to go on, then mostly you have one steer angle and you can keep the same steering angle to drive on the highway. But there are some corners that don't have the same steering angle all the time. So you have to adjust. And that's not very nice, especially if you're driving with high speed and you have to give more steering angle. That's quite dangerous. So it will give you a higher workload. So we have chosen the workload to be the steer speed. So our cost functional is based on the quadratic errors of the path and the steer speed. Of course, there are other parameters. The preview time, how far is our driver looking forward, the weight, because by adjusting the weight, you can adjust driver behavior. So if you have a very low weight on the steer workload, you have a driver that exactly wants to follow the path. Of course, if you exactly want to follow the path, you will get this behavior, because you're all the time correcting. If you have a high weight for the workload, you have a driver that's not exactly following the path, but a little bit smooth. So he's not driving like this, but more smooth. So by adjusting the weight, you can change the behavior of your driver. But we just set it to one. The speed and the path is defined here. So with these parameters, we did the simulation study. And based on this cost function, we calculated the optimal parameters. So all the time giving a certain gain, a certain value to the, both the gains of the errors, and then looking at the cost function, and then trying to optimize it. Like I said, we wanted to see if it's possible to give our virtual driver on his virtual car different tires to see if the parameters change. So we have here the tire characteristics, lateral tire characteristics, of five different tires. The blue one is the reference tire, and the other ones are 80, 60% or 120, sorry, 80 and 90% and 110 and 120% of the cornering stiffness. And the cornering stiffness is this angle. Yeah. So we have different tires for our virtual driver. We have two. Actually, we have one driver that does not adapt. So he has certain gains which are optimal for the reference tires. If we change his tires, so we just take another tire characteristic, he's not going to adapt. So he will drive the virtual path with the same gains for the reference tire. The other driver is able to adapt. So he is adjusting his gains to get the optimal cost function for that tire. And we wanted to see if there were differences between those. So the controller gains, so the two gains for the errors, are optimized based on the cost function for the reference tire characteristic. And the simulation are done, like I said, the non-adaptive driver and the adaptive driver. First, you can see the errors of the non-adaptive driver. So this driver has the optimal gains for the reference tire, which is the dark blue one here. And here you can see the lateral current error. Not squared, because if it was squared, it would become a lot bigger. But of course, in the cost function, these errors are squared. So the difference will become bigger. But here you can see the lateral error. This is the path he's driving in 45 seconds. And during his drive, he has these lateral errors. So here is zero, and he has an error to the left and then to the right. It's the dark blue one. The other ones are the other tires. Of course, they are not optimal, so you can see, certainly here for the cornering stiffness of 80%, here you can see the big errors here. So he isn't following the path very nice. Here you can see the other error. Again, he uses for the steer speed. So how quickly is he changing the steering angle to follow the path? And here you can see here not very, the differences are not as big as here, but here you can see only here on the peaks a little bit. Now let's compare that with the other driver who is able to adapt. And here you can see the errors of the adaptive driver. And as you can see, if we switch, you can see there are differences. So this driver is actually following with the other tires the path better than the non-adaptive driver. Also here you can see the errors here are smaller. So if we now take a look at the gains of our driver, because that was the interesting part. I wanted to see if there are significant differences in the gain. Then first you can see our non-adaptive driver. Of course, he's not adapting, so all the gains are staying the same. Here are the different tires, 80, 90, 100%, 110 and 120 of the cornering stiffness. And these are the gains that belong to the driver for that tire. And if you look at the cost function here, this is the cost function, you can see, as expected, the lowest value for the reference tire. Of course, we optimized for that tire, so it's not so strange. This is the lowest value. But if you see, this is the value of the cost function, and you can see the big part here, the yellow part, is due to the path error. And a small part is due to the workload. With the other tires, you can see here, if we have the less stiff tires, then the cost function goes up. And here, even 300%, where here it's 100%. But as you can see, it's mostly the path error that contributes to the cost function. Also here, if we have stiffer tires, we have not a big cost functional here as the other tires, but also the cost function is higher. If we look at the adaptive driver, so what we did, the virtual driver who was able to adapt his gains had driven the path, and then we opened up the driver model and looked at the gains. And as we can see here, this is the reference tire. So these are the gains for the reference tire. If the cornering stiffness is getting less, so the tires are less stiff, he will adapt his gains. He will increase the gain for the orientation error, and he will decrease the gain for the lateral error. And here, for the stiffer tire, he also adapts. So, if we look at the cost function here, you can see he adapts his parameters to get a low cost function. So he will have less path deviation. Of course, we have seen that before in the graph. So, conclusion of this study was that actually the gains here, you can see quite a big adaptation of our virtual driver to different tires. So, that gave us an idea that, well, actually we could use the model of McGruer for this modeling, and we have performed experiments, but now with the real driver and a real car. The objective of our experiments are stated here. First of all, the experiments are performed with professional test drivers, so also with different tires, so they have to rate the tires just as they are used to do. So we have subjective evaluation, and of course we also have objective measurements. We will see later here. Also we wanted to see if we could get some experimental derived workload measures for the control effort and the mental workload. And we want to see if we could model the experiment and then model the driver and look at the driver parameters. The other objectives were we bought a new test vehicle here for the HAN, for the research, but also for the students, so they could use it. But because it was a new vehicle, we had to do some testing with it to get an idea how the vehicle would react. For the workload measures, we also want to do testing with for the physical parameters of the driver. And we are working together with a company called Moldus to do that sort of measurements. But that was also new for us and new for the driver. So in this experiment, we tested the test equipment. So we didn't need it right away, but we just wanted to let it go along with the testing to see if it works. For the experiments, we have a vehicle which we try to want to keep as constant as possible because we're interested in the driver and in the tires. So the vehicle must be as constant. Also the environment, because like I said, of course, if it's wet or dry, it's a big difference, but also small differences in the weather conditions can account for quite a big difference in vehicle behavior. If we keep the driver, the vehicle, and the environment as constant as possible, then if we see differences, then we can relate them to the tires. The other way around, if we keep the tires constant and the vehicle and the environment, we can compare the different drivers. This is the setup. Here you can see our test vehicle, it's a BMW, and you see all sorts of test equipment here. It's built on the outside of the vehicle, but also inside the vehicle. So there are sensors inside the vehicle, the accelerometers. This equipment here can measure the velocity and the height. There's also a steering wheel, which the steering angle is measured, and the steering angle velocity, and also the moment, so what the driver also feels in the steering wheel. We had two professional test drivers from Fredestein, and we have the driver measurements. Like I said, those were only for testing. So we had different cameras installed. Here you can see one. And we have measurements for the heartbeat of the driver. We wanted to keep the environment as constant as possible, so we did our testing at the test circuit in Lelystad, because we know which road there is, we know that there's no other traffic bothering us. And here you can see the test circuit, it's quite large. We used here, this circle, and we used this area here to do different tests. For the experiments, actually for the whole research, we have chosen six different tires. And the tires are chosen based on their handling behavior. And here is the less handling, and there is the better handling tire. And as you can see, we have divided the six tires into three groups. We have one here, which is a winter tire, which is actually a very small winter tire with a high aspect ratio. We have here three tires that are quite close together in the handling area, winter tires and an all-season tire. And here we have the better handling tires, which are two summer tires. The idea is that first you want to see if you can see differences between those three groups. And if we go further in the research and we are able to see the differences, we want to see if we can see differences between the small groups. So we have six different tires. Of course, there are a lot of tires because if you do the testing, surely the steady state testing, you can throw away the tires afterwards because they are totally worn out after that. So we have a lot of tires. Also, these tires are tested so we know the tire characteristic. It's done by the tire test vehicle here from TNO, and here built in is a tire test machine, and you can do the tire testing with different slip angles, with different load, with different camber. So there are, for every tire, there have been done a lot of testing, so we have all the data from each tire. We did some objective testing, mostly also for the vehicle. Objective testing, so the driver must perform like a robot, but the test drivers did those tests too, because it's quite difficult to do an objective testing. We did it with students also, and it's really difficult to drive a steady state circle with constant speed, or to make a step steer and hold the steering. So we also did it with the professional test drivers, which was actually quite new for them too, because they are used to go only very fast on the Nürburgring or that sort of circuit. So now they had to do it slowly, and that was for one of them was very difficult, because we said you have to do the steady state test and slowly increasing the speed. But of course, he was not used to that, so he increased the speed way too fast. So it was also difficult for them. Well, 10 to 20 repetitions of each combination of driver and tire. So we've been testing the whole week, and we need it the whole week because it will take a lot of time. Because every tire must be driven in, must be warmed up before you can do the testing with it. So. Also the subjective evaluation. Well, we don't have the Nürburgring in Lelystad yet, so we had to make our own circuit. We discussed very extensively with the professional test drivers. So what they needed to be able to give a subjective testing, given Lelystad. So we made a sort of mini circuit, which they had to do on the highest possible speed. Here you can see a double lane change, which they took several times. We have here a big circle, which has a radius of 100 meters. And they used it for high speed, and then with or without throttle changing, so they could feel how the vehicle reacts. And here they could build up some speed before going through the lane change. Well, if you do the testing, it states here blind testing. Well, we don't work with the glasses, but blind testing is meant they don't know which tire they are testing. Well, actually, they do know which tire are in the batches. So they have three tires or four tires they must test. They do know which tires those are, but actually when they are testing, they don't know which tire is on the car. You have to do it in batches. You can't just take all the six tires and say, well, let's take them all six, and then you have to do them one by one. Because when you're at number six, you don't know number one, how it felt. So you must do it in small batches so that they can relate them to each other. And we divided them in these batches. So the first batch was, for instance, number 1, 2, and 3. And always there was also an extra tire tested. So for this batch, four tires were tested. For instance, 1, 2, 3, and another time 2. Or 1, 2, 3, and 1. Again, and of course in different. So they gave their subjective evaluations for four tires, and you could compare two. Those should be the same. Because of the time, you also have to do it in batches, because the weather always changes. We have different evaluation aspects and overall judgment. You can see them here. These are subjective evaluation aspects. So, of course, you can see steering angle. We can measure the steering angle. But this is not the measured steering angle, but it's the steering angle which the driver experiences. Also, the grip or the yaw delay, so how long it will take before I steer and my car reacts. That yaw delay is a subjective evaluation. Stability while cornering with or without throttle change. And the overall judgment. Also, they were able to give some comments on the tires or the tire testing. Well, here are a few slides to give an impression during the testing. As you can see here, it was all the time we were worrying that it was going to rain, because if it started to rain, we had to stop. And all week it was this sky, so And actually on the Friday, in the end of the afternoon, it started to rain when we were finished. So we were very happy that it worked. And as you can see here, it's one of the drivers on